listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
On LA Talk Radio, as always, powered by Breakdown Services, our presenting sponsor. Delighted to have them on board.
Absolutely. And as you know, ladies and gentlemen, Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent, agents, as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge performingartslive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our weekly live arts calendar. And today we have with us, I'm very excited, Michael, we got a good show today.
We do.
We have two iconic performers from the theater, motion pictures, and television. The distinguished Mr. Richard Chamberlain has joined us. Richard, welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
And on the phone shortly, we're going to speak to Richard a little later in the hour, but on the phone, we're going to hook up with her shortly, is from The Great White Way, one of Broadway's most enduring stars, the captivating Miss Andrea McArdle, with whom we'll be speaking in just a few minutes. I'm very excited about talking to Andrea McArdle when she joins us, Michael, because I have a whole whole Starlight Express thing. We're like the same age, she and I.
You are?
Yeah.
That young?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
We're both that young. Exactly.
Wow.
And, I'll talk to her about it, because I think it would be, I'd like to get her to weigh in on the topic, actually.
I'm sure you would. How was your week, Bob?
How was your week? My week was good.
How was my week? I told you kind of a crazy story. Paul and I meet Richard every about an hour and a half before we do the show, and we kind of talk about what we're going to talk about.
That and the tequila shooters.
Yeah.
We get those two things out of.
Where's mine?
Exactly. And we go over, you know, what has actually happened to us during the week and what is funny and what is not funny and some things that happened to me were not so funny this week, but we won't go into that.
Oh, yeah, but in a car accident with a Mack truck going the wrong way on the express. Oh, no, the wrong way.
Yeah, I was getting on the on-ramp of a freeway, and coming down the on-ramp was a car coming in my direction. They had apparently either...
Oh,
were going the wrong way on the freeway, or they were going up the on-ramp and decided it was the wrong on-ramp and they wanted to go elsewhere.
Oh, dear.
As I'm turning up, a Mack truck is simultaneously turning up with me.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
And this driver did a scramble, you know, 3-4 times jockeying his car in and out to get back up the on-ramp to let us go forward.
Scary.
It was scary. I thought I was in the midst of a car chase.
That's unnerving. That's unnerving.
Yeah, it is. But
I didn't have nearly as exciting a week. I got to tell you.
Well, you were at the theater.
I was
weekend.
At the theater.
Yeah.
I'm curious about something, and Richard, I'd like for you to weigh in on this, and about theatrical protocol. Certain things audience members do that I just don't understand what protocol is. And Michael, I want your opinion on this too.
Sure.
When you go into a theater. And a large venue, and there's a bunch of people seated in a row, and you have to squeeze past them to get to your seat. What is protocol? Are you supposed to face the people? Are you supposed to turn your back to the people when you squeeze by them? Is there a particular? Is there an Emily Post for this sort of behavior? I mean, what do you do? What do you do? Do you face them? Do you turn away from them?
I once thought that facing was the more polite way, but then you can't. Your knees all get tangled up and everything, and
oh, that's true.
It's much logistically, it's much better to have your ass in their face because your knees bend the same way.
You heard it here first. Richard Chamberlain said ass in your face.
No. We need to have a soundbite of that to broadcast the show to just say, logistically, it's easier to have your ass in their face. We need that whole soundbite together. But it does make sense because your knees bend the same way.
Yes.
Then it's not like a flamingo fight. Because I tell you, it only has to happen to you once where you're facing a person and you trip. Yes. And then, you know, you go from polite theater conversation and it's instant Caligula.
Yes.
And you don't want that to happen.
Yes. Yes.
So, but you could meet someone that way. And well, I think you did, didn't you?
Sure, you could.
Yeah.
I am sure you
could. I do that kind of quarter turn to the right thing, you know, where you're kind of not really in their face.
Yes.
And you're not really
yes.
with the backside facing
yes.
them. And just watch, you know, watch the toe stepping.
Yeah.
That's what you
well,
do.
Well, it's
right?
difficult for me because I have size, as you know, I have size 14 feet. So
14?
Yes, I am...
This is a yeah. This I'm, is a well-known fact.
I am. I have freakishly large feet. Yeah.
Look, show him your hands.
No, what? I don't want to
show
be a sideshow.
Show the hands,
okay.
Paul.
I have big
look
hands
at those
as
fingers.
Well.
So. Well, it's a big hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, do we have to go to the sideshow right away?
No,
so quick.
What to you say? Know? You know. Well, you know what they say about the big hands.
And
big
sadly,
feet?
That's where the
I
similarities
wasn't
end.
Up.
Okay. Let's move on to more pleasant topics because I'm very, very excited about speaking to Andrea McArdle with us. Would you please introduce her? Michael, because you're more versed in her work than I am. But
I would
very,
be
very
happy
excited.
To. Andrea McArdle first captured the hearts of theatergoers everywhere in 1977 when she originated the title role in the mega musical Annie, based on the popular Harold Gray comic strip Little Orphan Annie. And as Annie, Andrea became the youngest performer ever to be nominated for a Tony Award as Best Lead Actress in a Musical. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome the extraordinary Andrea McArdle.
Andrea, are you with us?
Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
How are you? I'm great. My week wasn't as exciting as yours either.
Okay, but Andrea, could you weigh in on the protocol issue? What would you do if you had to squeeze into an aisle? Which way do you face, the audience or the stage?
I actually always face the stage because at least if your derriere is in their general, I mean, at face level or whatever, you can at least go on your tippy toes and lean in.
Right.
And there is no art to it because there is no graceful way to do it. Yep. And I am as guilty as the next person. You know, I'm as awkward as the next person. And I'm really, I mean, I'm little, so I don't know what you would do if you were a really large person. Although I always get behind that lady who still has that beehive hairdo. It happens to me every single time. Or like the guy who's as tall as Fred Gwynn in front of me.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yep.
Andrea, we want to thank you, first of all, for taking time out of your rehearsal and our thanks to Steve Glaudini for letting you do that today, your director. Because I know this is your first day and you're just in from New York over the weekend and you were so kind and I understand made a personal appearance at the AIDS Walk yesterday here in Miami.
I did. I was honored to be at the AIDS Walk yesterday and, you know, I'm not out in LA a whole bunch because I'm New York based and it was so incredibly nice and we had the Hollywood's mayor and LA's mayor and, it was just, you know, an amazing turnout and, you know, I got to, I sang a little song that I, no matter what happened during it, nothing would ever throw me. I sang Tomorrow, which I don't do a whole lot. It's kind of on the shelf. But for, you know, for a charity like that and the message, you know, is appropriate. And it was raining yesterday. So,
yes, it was.
So it was a lot of fun to be using electrical equipment out in the rain.
A little shocking, was it?
Yes. But it was wonderful and it was uplifting. And there were so many people who it was their first year, and a lot of really young people. So that's exciting. And you know, they're doing a lot. And Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS does so much, and I do a lot with them. And you know, they're changing things. And it's very exciting what they do.
They are. And
I'm having a ball out here. I am so excited to be out here playing. Listen, I waited a long time to play a crazy person. That's all I can say. I played every girl next door, and I got to tell you, playing the crazy people, it's underrated. I never want to play anybody normal again. It's so boring.
So, well, tell the listeners what you are doing, because I think it's incredibly exciting to be revisiting the play, but in a different capacity.
At first, it was incredibly freaky and incredibly surreal for me, and, you know, I had that moment of, what were you thinking? You know, what is wrong with you? Well, there's so many things, but I'm actually playing the role, and if this isn't full circle, I don't know what is. I'm actually playing the role originated by the one and only Dorothy Loudon, who used to, you know, slap me around every night, and, you know, and I must admit, I became a spectator too, just watching her. It was such a thrill to watch a comic genius up close like that 8 times a week. And she said, I taught you everything you know about comedy, but definitely not everything I know, so watch it.
Oh.
But we had a great relationship. She hated children, but I was somewhat of like just a small, just like a midget. So we got along incredibly well. And it's very hard to do a role. I mean, that's like trying to do Sally Bowles in Cabaret and try not thinking of Liza, you know, for 10 seconds.
Right.
Well,
right.
For me, it's very hard to, but I did one production in North Carolina this summer, and I couldn't get her performance out of my head. And this time, I actually feel like I'm starting in neutral, and it's starting to become mine, which I didn't know if it was ever going to happen.
Right.
So it's a lot of fun to work on, and you know, it would be nice to go back to Broadway and win that Tony Award in the role that beat me out the first time.
Well, you know, you're working at one of the most distinguished theaters and Musical Theater West and the Carpenter Center there in all of Southern California, one of the most successful, as a matter of fact. And Steve Glaudini is certainly one of the...
I was so pleasantly surprised. You know, I don't get out here to do theater much. And, you know, many years ago I did Oliver out this way and had a great time. But I got to tell you, from top to bottom, everybody on this creative team and the administrative team, even the marketing, these people are just, they're you know... They're top shelf. They're really, really awesome.
Well, we love them, and we're glad you're here in our West Coast. We're sorry about the weather for you.
I like it like this. I
Do
mean, you?
You
know, this is, I mean, if it were, you know, really, really sunny and 80 degrees, I really would, you know, rather be at the beach. So this is great for rehearsing.
Yeah, if you're going to be inside during the rainy times. Where are you from originally, Andrea?
I'm born and raised in Philadelphia, and you can't take the Philly out of the girl, no matter how many years she leaves.
It's well, like Paul being in Chicago, right?
No, I'm not.
But you're from Connecticut.
Well, I tell people New York because it makes me sound more ballsy.
Oh.
But actually, my mom's from the Bronx, and my father's from Northern Italy, actually. Huh. So,
so you're a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he happened to see you.
Yes, I did.
In Starlight Express.
I did. And
did it bother him that there were no lyrics in the show?
No, it was the thing was that I had a tremendous crush on you during Starlight Express.
Who didn't? Huh?
Because I
really
saw, well, the thing was that I, you know, they had said, you know, oh, we're going to go see Starlight Express and Andrew McArdle's in it. It's like, oh, Annie, isn't that sweet? Oh, we'll get to see Annie do something else. And then this little sassy smoking car comes out, and I was conflicted. Let's just say that.
Like, you know what? My agents were William Morris at the time, and they said, you're absolutely not doing the show. You're going to break all your bones, because I tend to be accident prone. And they said, you're not doing this show. And when I got offered Ashley the smoking car, the sexy role, I said, oh, yes, I am absolutely doing it. I never get hired to play the sexy one, and I'm doing it no matter what.
Now, had you skated before that? I mean, and if you had, were you fairly versed in it? Or was it?
I was a gymnast when I started in this business, so I loved, I mean, had I not gone into performing, I definitely would have gone into, you know, I wanted to be a professional athlete. And so I skated, skied and skateboarded and roller skated every, you know, for a dollar every Saturday on the old quad skate. So I was a skater, and I was dancing with the A team, like the Fosse dancers, but they weren't skaters, and I was. So when you put us up on skates, it evened out.
Oh,
but
okay.
It was, I never worked so hard for so little money in my life, and I loved my experience.
Now,
fractured my cheekbone and blew my knee out, but otherwise it was a lot of fun.
Oh, now the Starlight Express, those were the old quad skates too, like the roller disco skates, right?
They were.
Even have those
with the toe stop, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then they moved on to roller blades, which is incredibly hard to skate dance on compared to quad skates, but you know, I think I'm sure Starlight will have a revival. I must say, it's not a show I wanted to go see, but I got to tell you, it was like such a blast to be in every night.
Well, you know, it was just that. Starlight, I think, was exactly what it was supposed to be, which was spectacle. Which
exactly,
was just like,
yes.
You know, just, I mean, how is it not spectacle when you have, you know, people, you know, the roller skating and the whole train thing, and then music is, you know, the music is Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know, I mean, you're not going to really...
Yeah.
You know, but...
Yeah, but I must say, the London production was so brilliant because what they did there was take street skaters and teach them how to do that, you know, in a Broadway, in a proper show. And
oh,
what they
okay.
did in New York was take Broadway thespians and teach them how to skate. And I think that the general consensus is that everyone who saw it in London said it was far more exciting because those people race like, you know, they made us watch the movie Rollerball.
Oh, okay.
The original. And you know, just for this, but the skating scenes where they actually, you know, race and everything, they I hear was much, much more exciting in London.
Sounds
but it was just fun. And John Napier, and we had Trevor Nunn direct our show, and he, of course, directed, co-directed Les Miserables, and we ended up opening the same week, so he was actually theater hopping back and forth.
It sounds like that London production was a lot grittier, just a little
more... grittier and a lot edgier, and yeah. The people were, like, I mean, they were crazy doing, you know, the tricks and all that they did were just, it was like an extreme sport.
Right.
And, you know, there was something, I mean, if I really were a dancer, there's no way I would do that show because it was really dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first hydraulic stage. We had a bridge, and the hydraulics would not meet up often. So we flew off, you know. And they would tell you to stop racing, and you say, well, that's kind of hard when I'm going down the bridge and there's no connection.
Right.
Yeah, I would say so. Andrea, may I ask you, you have done so many different types of roles in your career. And when you start looking back at you being on Broadway as Annie, I understand that you were plucked from the ensemble of orphans, actually, to take over the role. That's correct. Am I right?
Yes, I was playing the toughest orphan, and at that time, they didn't see anybody who wasn't a natural redhead for the role of Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, I don't think anybody who ever played the role was ever a redhead, because after me, they got a little superstitious, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize you have to go on, you know, and look for what's on the inside, and of course, you can fix the outside stuff.
Right.
But they realize that... the toughest orphan is the one that would be able to survive on the street, and the other little girl who was... Think of casting Oliver in the role of Annie rather than the Artful Dodger. You needed somebody with that pluck and street smarts, and I was a ratty little tomboy. There was nothing, you know, nothing feminine, and I was just a scrappy little kid, and I was also really... I mean, I started my freshman year of high school when I was in that show. So the last thing I wanted to be doing was wearing, you know, a red fright wig and white ankle socks and Mary Jane.
So you've gone from that to playing something along the lines of what might be expected of you, Louisa in the Fantastics, and then to things that are a departure, and I think in probably most people how they think of you, Eva Perón in Evita, for example. And also Mama Rose and Gypsy, which I'm thrilled to know that you did this. What do you, out of those roles like that, Les Mis, I know you did Fantine, that seems...
Well, I remember seeing Angela Lansbury when it came through at the Forest Theater in Philadelphia when I was 8 years old, and I saw her in that show. I actually got cast as Louise, and my father would not let me go on the road. And from the time I was 8 years old, the only role I wanted to play in that show was Mama Rose. And there's something definitely wrong with an 8-year old who wants to play Mama Rose. So had Annie not happened, honestly, I think I always would have gotten that second lead, the more character role, which are the best roles. You know, playing the ingenue, you're in every you're in every ensemble number, and sometimes it's thankless, and other people get the laughs, and, you know, to stop the show. So these kind of roles like Hannigan and Mama Rose and all, I mean, they're just, you know, they're amazing. And I love the fact that most of the greatest roles for women in musicals are for women over 50. So, hey,
and
let's go.
I agree with you. And you know what I think is really cool? You said at the beginning of this interview that you kind of put Tomorrow, that wonderful song from Annie, on the shelf and don't do it too often. But I do recall... some years ago, not in the too far distant past, that you did a PBS program, Leading Ladies of the Broadway. And
right.
You came out and you sat down on the steps in the center of the set, and you sang a medley of Silver Lining and Tomorrow.
Look for the Silver Lining.
Look for the Silver Lining and Tomorrow, and it was the most thrilling and touching moment in the whole show for me. I mean,
well,
I
thank
just...
you. And Scott Ellis, who's an old friend of mine, he and Susan Stroman actually directed me in a dinner theater production of Grease. I think they made $800 total together on the production. And it was the best production of Grease I had ever seen. A man by the name of Lindsay Davis did the costumes, who ended up doing Edwin Drood. And, I mean, Grease never saw it. It was, they turned it into such a gem that it was actually respectable. But he directed me in that, and I was actually not even supposed to be on that roster. Bernadette Peters canceled, and so they called me very late, like 2 days before it happened. And it ended up getting me Belle on Broadway, which I thought I was a little too old to be playing Belle. I thought they were calling me for Mrs. Potts, and I was like, hold on, let me sit down first. Because I was like, it's happening, get ready for it. And they said Belle, and I said, well, gosh, couldn't you have called me before Debbie Gibson? She's 10 years younger. So I ended up playing Belle for 2 years, which is the longest I've ever stayed in a show, and that's really long. That's a long time to do a role.
Yeah,
the, well, I'm sure you were magnificent.
It's tough in another way to, you know, keep it fresh.
Andrea, I want to ask you one more thing that Michael and I always like to do here on the show before we say goodbye, because we know you have a busy day ahead of you, and thank you for calling in. But one of the things that we like to ask people is to share a brief version of their theatrical nightmare. The worst thing to happen to them on stage, either the most embarrassing or the worst thing. And you sort of alluded to some troubled times with the technical aspects of Starlight Express. But does anything come to mind for you about the true disaster, or the actor's nightmare, or an embarrassing moment that you could share for the listeners?
Well, I have had a few of those moments, and I don't know if this has happened to Richard, but you can be in a show for, the longer you're in a show, you get relaxed in like a, I don't know, it's just the muscle memory kicks in.
Right.
So, you know, I am guilty of, you know, thinking, am I going to do Chinese, or am I going to go Mexican or Thai, or am I going to go healthy for dinner? And I remember taking a 4-week leave from Beauty and the Beast to go do my Christmas show with my daughter and brother and a cast of 80 at the Tropicana in Atlantic City. And I came back and I was singing the first song that Belle sings in the show. And I had to look down and see what color my costume was, because I forgot what show I was in.
Oh, my God.
And when you're a veteran, I'll tell you, the best thing to do is you think it's 10 minutes have gone by, but it's actually like, you know, 10 seconds.
Right.
And I just, it's so hard to, but I tried to keep my cool. And Tim Jerome, a great Broadway actor, was playing my father, and he just covered his microphone and quietly, you know, led me into the first line, and they played it again. But I've had disasters. It happened to me forgetting Maybe when John Lennon was in the audience. And, you know, like, you know, God, I'm going to have to move to another town. Oh, wait, I won't be able to work in another town. This is where I do everything. So I have a lot of, you know, some I can't tell, and those are two that come to mind. But you'll have to wait for the book, because, man, I have some good stories.
We figured there was a book in here.
Okay, good.
Well, Andrea, please give...
I just have to wait for a few people to die first. Nope, yeah. Just kidding.
There you go. Please give Michael Paternostro, who you're working with, who's playing your rooster in your production down there in Long Beach, and also...
Yes, who also played... who also accompanied me yesterday at the AIDS Walk, and I had no idea how talented he was, so I just find that quite really annoying.
He also played...
No, he's fabulous.
...played at my nightclub here in Los Angeles. Sterling's upstairs at
Bocello's.
Yes, he was the musical director for a terrific act last night. He's a wonderful performer himself, from Broadway, of course. And also Betts Malone, Mr. Glaudini's wife, one of our great regional stars here in Los Angeles of our Broadway musical theaters. And Melissa...
She is so perfect as Lily, and the two of them to get to do Easy Street with, it is just pure joy.
I'm sure. And little Melissa Mitchell, watch out for her. She's playing the star to be there in your production, and she's fantastic. And ladies and gentlemen, Annie previews October 29th and runs October 30th through November 14th. Musical Theater West, artistic director Stephen Glaudini directs, with musical direction by Daniel Thomas and choreography by Roger Castellano. Annie tickets may be purchased online at musical.org. That's musical.org, or by telephone at 562-856-1999, extension 4. And they may also, of course, be in purchased in person at the Musical Theater West Box Office, located in Long Beach, from noon to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. Andrea, thank you so much for allowing Paul and I and Richard to be a part of your day here.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Andrea, it's Richard. Break a leg, kiddo. I hope you have a wonderful time.
Hey, thanks a lot. You know, I was working when you were doing Sound of Music, but I did sneak in and second act you, and you were just brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Andrea.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Lovely lady.
She was. Very, very sweet.
Fun. Little lively. Accent. Little East Coast accent.
Yeah. She's a lively lady.
She is a lively lady. She is. And enjoyed speaking to her. And I'm very much looking forward to speaking to you, Richard, as I know Michael is. Uh-huh. We got to burn through our live arts calendar here. Michael, do you want me to kick it off?
Please do, Paul.
L.A. Theater Works presents Enron in its final week at the Skirball Cultural Center, Magnet Auditorium in Los Angeles, California. Enron is a rapid-fire thrill ride through one of the most infamous financial scandals in history. Using a clever mix of humor, pathos, and music, big business comes alive as Razzle Dazzle Entertainment, casting a shocking new light on today's economy and how we got here. You can catch the fever of Enron through October 24th.
Goodbye, gray skies. Hello, blue. Happy days are here again with Richie, Potsy, Ralph the Mouth, and the unforgettable King of Cool, Arthur the Fonz Fonzarelli, based on the hit Paramount Pictures television series Happy Days. A new musical reintroduces one of America's best-loved families, the Cunninghams, in the days of 1959 Milwaukee, complete with varsity sweaters, hula hoops, and jukebox sock hopping. The famed drive-in malt shop and number one hangout, Arnold's, is in danger of demolition, so the gang teams up to save it with a dance contest and TV-worthy wrestling match. Presented by Cabrillo Music Theater at the Fred Cavalli Theater and the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza, Happy Days will have you rockin' and rollin' October 22nd through October 31st.
And for further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us during the week at stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
Indeed.
Now, Michael, yes. Tell me a little bit about this. Is it Callie Carson?
Gorgeous, young, blonde, 22-year-old young woman, Richard, who debuted at my nightclub here in Los Angeles.
And what nightclub would that be, Michael?
That would be Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's.
Yeah, I was just there for the first time recently. Saw Sally Kellerman. She was great.
Oh, yes. That's the club. And on the weekends, on Sundays, we produce the best of Broadway performers in concert. From New York, people like Andrea and our regional stars here. And Callie Carson is one of our new young stars who recently starred here in Little Shop of Horrors and did an amazing job. At last night, it was a very special event for her, as it was her cabaret debut. And 22 years old, she has an old soul and a beautiful heart and commanded the stage so brilliantly and with an amazing set of music and took the audience on a ride for an hour like a professional that was doing this for the last 15, 20 years.
Well,
it was extraordinary, actually. Probably, I must say, one of the best, if not the best.
You said it was one of the best before. Yeah. It's a beautiful room there, isn't it?
It's a terrific room.
The whole vibe that's created, it's like a New York supper club.
Yes, it is, actually.
Yeah, it's like going into a different world. You go into Vitello's. I mean, Vitello's is nice, but you go in and you have sort of a standard, you know, Italian restaurant vibe about that, and then you go upstairs into that little pocket room, and it is just like it's like a world in and of itself.
We tried to make you feel like you were kind of back in the Broadway district when we were designing it up there. So hopefully we've achieved that. Four years later, we've been there 4 years. Yeah. And you sing in your career. Maybe you'll do a cabaret for us, no?
I'm going to resurrect those vocal cords.
You heard it here first. You heard it here first.
Why not?
Yeah. I would love it. If you want to talk about it, we will sit down.
Okay.
All right.
I'd have to do it with somebody, like Sally or something, you know, and sort of share the stage.
Oh, that would be a blast.
That would be a blast. Fantastic. We have the best of the best. We would love to have you. And Paul, you were out to the theater, and
yes,
you
I was.
Saw a fabulous show, I
saw,
understand.
I Slaughterhouse saw Slaughterhouse 5.
Yes.
A production of Slaughterhouse 5 that was adapted by Eric Simonson and directed by Tiger Reel. This is it really is an amazing piece of work, obviously. I mean, everyone knows Slaughterhouse 5, the book. But I just found the play very, very interesting. You're jumping off the edge of the pool with Vonnegut. You don't have a diving board. It's a real a real risky piece to do. And you know, for those of listeners that are not too familiar with it, it's based on Kurt Vonnegut's classic novel Slaughterhouse 5, which introduces us to Billy Pilgrim, a man who becomes unstuck in time after he is abducted by aliens. It's sort of autobiographical in that it's Vonnegut's experience as seeing the totally militarily unnecessary bombing of Dresden, and then you know, the dramatization of that, and it really is a wonderful, wonderful piece. The performances were uniformly very, very good, and they really had a tough job for themselves, because it's so many different acting styles. Some people had performances that were very understated, very based in realism, and some people were very heightened. And in a lot of productions, you would think that would be, oh, you know, we have five people in five different plays here. But because it's Vonnegut, it works, you know, because his work is all over the map anyway. Mm-hmm. But it was very, very impressive. Really did enjoy that production tremendously. And actually, Lily Vonnegut is in it. Kurt Vonnegut's daughter is in the play. And she was wonderful. Do want to do a shout out to two of the performers. Brian Helm did excellent work in the various roles that he had. I really enjoyed his performance. And in a show that had so much, as I said, about this heightened sort of stylized performances, Warren Davis gave a beautifully understated performance in the role that he did. And it was I really did enjoy it tremendously. Had a couple of issues with the staging, so the staging was a little bit choppy for me at times. Mm-hmm. They had taken a proscenium and sort of made it into a thrust, and there were some times where sight lines were an issue, but, you know, that's the trade-off when you take big chances with staging like that. Anyway, they are playing through October 23rd, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8, and that is at the Studio Stage Theater, 520 Northwestern in Los Angeles, California. And for reservations, you can call 213-393-5638. And really did enjoy Slaughterhouse 5. But
well,
now,
yes, you know, as long as we're talking about this too, we should really tell our listeners. They've been kind of living with us in regard to a wonderful show, Richard, that Paul has directed and is a big hit here in Los Angeles. I mean, the reviews just kind of pouring in, accolades that are amazing.
Oh, and it's going well.
It's called it's a parody of John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men and the Grapes of Wrath.
Yes.
And it's called Of Grapes and Nuts.
Yes.
And it was done in Chicago 20 years ago. Paul was an original cast member in that production 20 years ago. Now he's directing it here in Los Angeles. And it's your closing week coming up.
Yeah,
on
we have
October
24th. Three
is
more
your
shows.
Last night.
Just can't... so elated about the response. It's just been unbelievable.
Great.
Three more shows, and I think people really needed it. It's sort of like this, you know, we're all having hard times now, and, you know, the state of the economy and all that, and the unemployment rate, and I really think this sort of little wink to these American ideals where we all sort of just sort of exhale and take a breath and realize that we're all in this together. And I think that's why people have embraced it so much. But we're having an absolute ball with it. And thank you for bringing it up, Michael.
Absolutely.
But now I'm just so excited to speak to you, Mr. Chamberlain. And
Richard.
I'm just delighted to have you. No, my mother would not permit that. I have to refer to you as Mr. Chamberlain. No, Richard, a pleasure to meet you.
I want to give you a proper introduction.
Please do, Michael.
Our next guest is one of America's most distinguished actors, a bona fide legend of stage and screen. He became teen idol in the title role of the 60s hit television series Dr. Kildare and went on to star in such films as The Slipper and the Rose, The Man in the Iron Mask, Julius Caesar, The Music Lovers, and two of television's most memorable film series, Shogun and The Thornbirds. And those are only a very few of his credits. He remains a dominant force in all mediums, and on Broadway has starred in revivals of both My Fair Lady and The Sound of Music, Blithe Spirit, and The Night of the Iguana. Please welcome to State of the Arts, Richard Chamberlain.
Thank you.
I am applauding and standing. Welcome. They can't see it on the radio, but I'm standing. I'm standing for Richard.
Indeed, indeed. So nice to have you. Thank you for taking time out of your day. And theater, I mean, here I just touched upon it. Television, my goodness, we're looking here at your resume of wonderful things that you've done through the years. Staggering that you have done what you've done. And yet, this all started for you here in Los Angeles as a young man. You were a co-founder of an important company that remains today called
Company of Angels.
Company of Angels. Yes. Excuse me, yes.
Well, we called it Company of Angels because it was existing on our donations. We were the angels going.
Oh, so the company was actually paying for everything.
Yes. Well, in the beginning, that was true, yes.
I think that's fairly. I think that's a fairly common practice still with a lot of theater companies in L.A. But I don't mean to jump right out of theater, Michael, because you introduced that, but I'm very interested to hear that there's two television projects that just took place for you. You just did a three-episode arc on Chuck?
No, I did two episodes of Chuck.
Two episodes
playing
of Chuck.
A very bad guy.
Okay.
And now I'm going to do three episodes of Brothers and Sisters.
Brothers and Sisters, okay.
Or maybe four.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And have you started that, or do you start
No, it'll start tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I'm rather nervous about it, as a matter of fact.
Do you know any of the members of that cast?
No. We had a table reading, which is very unusual to me, anyway, in television. A few days ago, mm-hmm. and I got to meet Sally and all those wonderful cast. And they are like a family now. They're just so easy and so friendly and welcoming. It was great.
I'm curious, though, with your breadth of experience and all that, what did you find unusual? What was odd about the table read for you?
Well, it's a luxury that doesn't happen very often in television.
Oh, I see.
It happens in movies. It happens in theater, of course.
Right.
And plays and stuff, but not in television, serious television.
Oh, so in a good way.
It's a wonderful luxury. Right. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
You know, I must say something about Sally Field. I think she's an extraordinary actress.
Boy, me too.
And I always have. And here's a little, I don't know whether you know this, Paul, or not, but do you remember a television series called The Dating Game? It was a variety.
Yeah.
It was a game show.
Yeah.
I was the first boy ever. I used to be an actor when I was a kid and in movies and television, but I was the first boy to ever pick a girl on that show. I did basically the pilot for that.
Oh, really?
Huh.
No kidding.
The format was in reverse, you know, for the beginning of the show. And my agent asked me if I'd like to do this, and I said, I would, but I think if they could get Sally Field on the show, then I'm there in a heartbeat. And they said, well, that may be, you know, I mean, she was on Gidget at the time, and they said, that may be a stretch, and we may not be able to do it. And I said, well, at least try. And I never got the answer back, and they kind of coerced me into doing the show. Long story short, I did the show. The three young ladies that I was asking questions to, you know, were answering them properly. And somehow, I knew somehow instinctively when I heard this voice, I said, oh, my God, it's her. It's her. And, of course, I chose her, and we had our big date.
Whoa.
Yes.
Really? With Sally Field.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
You had a date with Sally Field, and you didn't tell me this?
The full Monty there. Well, not exactly the full Monty. Not exactly that. Pardon me, Sally. It was at the Tahitian, the restaurant on La Cienega at that time. And, you know, we had a lovely, lovely evening, and she was couldn't have been sweeter. I've never forgotten that. She probably has forgotten that, but I've never forgotten that. But if you see her, tell her Michael Sterling said hello.
I certainly will.
And I know you'll see her. So you start working, and how long is it? Three or four shows in a row are you going to be shooting?
Yes.
This? Yeah?
Yes, it's called an arc.
Yes.
And I'm an old friend of the Ron Rifkin character, Saul.
Ah, yes.
And it's about what happens between us.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to tell you.
Okay. Oh, no, please don't.
I watch that show
tune in.
Every week. You know, with television that you've done and coming from the theater such as you have and then going back and having a life in the theater and some of these famous films, do you have a preference? I asked you this earlier before we started. I know that your roots are in the theater, but what is it really that makes
you? Well, my roots are in both, really, because Kildare came very, very early. So, but I think I feel most at home on stage.
Yes.
Partly because you get 4 weeks rehearsal.
Yeah.
But film acting is a wonderful, wonderful challenge because it's all backwards and upside down and little bits and pieces. And you develop the technique and all. So it's a wonderful game. It's sort of like tennis. But the theater is, you get the rehearsal, and then you get to do the thing from beginning to end. Of course, you do it every night, and sometimes twice a day, which I quite like.
Yeah.
But in both, you develop a kind of sense of family with the people you're working with, and I've always liked that.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
In both mediums.
I'm always intrigued when I hear about the process and, you know, film versus theater, and I think you're the perfect person to ask this next question to, because really your work with the Thornbirds and Shogun really defined the miniseries was not nearly as popular as it is now. Those were really formative miniseries in television.
I really lucked out.
And what you did with them, but you talk about that process and making the film. I mean, how grueling is? I mean, basically a miniseries is a 5, 6, 7 hour movie, depending on, you know,
or more.
And what is the? You talk about the family development of the relationship with it. I mean, that has to be like really running a marathon with people.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think the miniseries format for me, I was in on the golden age. I really was lucky. Is it's the perfect place between series television and movies. Movies are so slow. Right. And if you do 2 or 3 pages a day, you're lucky. And so there's a ton of sitting around, which is really hard work, sitting around.
Yeah.
That sounds funny, but it is. And series television is so fast. And I found that the miniseries, they spent a lot of money on them. They took a lot of time. We were 6.5 months, for instance, on Shogun in Japan. But it's just the perfect. We might have done 5 pages a day, and it was the perfect momentum for me to keep focused and keep your interest up.
Right, just enough, a little more urgency to keep
yes.
the energy and a little less downtime.
Yes,
that's fascinating.
Yes.
I would never have thought about that. You would have just thought that it would just it's basically a long made for TV movie. Why would it be different from a regular?
No, it's very different.
But right. It's very different. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever, when you were a young man, and especially when you went on to Kildare, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that you would have the career that you have come to have?
Well, I had a feeling. I was a very shy kid, very withdrawn and all this weird stuff. But I always thought I'd make it somehow as an actor. But I never dreamt that it would be like this. And such a long career, thank God. And so many, many different things. But starting out with Dr. Kildare, which sounds a little corny now, but it was a great experience and an incredible entree into all kinds of other facets of the business.
Well, it was a phenomenon at the time. I mean, you were the greatest star on television, and you know you know physically you were, the whole country was attracted to you. I mean, you made such an impact with that show. I remember my mother just swooning, and I mean, I think everybody in the country was on top. You never missed an episode of Dr. Kildare.
And in terms of the medical shows, you know, with Marcus Welby and,
right.
and Dr. Kildare, I mean, it was one of the seminal ones. I mean, I kept trying
exactly.
to think of others of that era. And
Ben Casey.
And Ben Casey.
Ben Casey.
But I mean, those were all around. I mean, Welby was first, right, Marcus Welby?
No, that was after us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, it just goes to show. I need to brush up on my medical TV show history. And you know what? Of course, it didn't establish anything. I mean, it's not like medical dramas are popular now. I mean, it is only about 9.
They're incredible now.
Yeah, I know.
And where we told 1.5 stories an episode, they tell about 16.
Yeah, they do.
An hour, and yeah. they make it work. It's amazing.
Do you have favorites now? That you watch? Like, do you enjoy House or?
Name another one quick.
Quick. ER.
Well, ER.
ER was fabulous.
Yeah.
ER is great.
Boston.
And CSI and all those.
What's it with the new one? Boston. It's based up to the actual hospital in Boston.
Oh, no. Oh. I know the one you mean, but I can't think
it's
of
it. It's a new one.
That I haven't seen.
It's that new medical TV show.
That's right. That's right. You know, Richard, looking at you and speaking to you on the telephone, and first of all, I mean, you. Good Lord, your voice is still the very same voice that you've always had, and you look amazing. You look just amazing. I mean,
well, thank you.
I wish a handsome man then and a handsome man now.
Yeah, well, I wish the listeners, I wish we could have had a microphone in the lobby before we walked in here today, because here at LA Talk Radio, there's a show right before us with Mother Love on, and we, the people from the women from that show came out, and it was like, I felt like I was standing next to Johnny Depp. I got to tell you, the way.
Well, I got to meet Mother Love, and she's unbelievable. She's great.
A character. She is a character. So we all have this pleasure of looking forward to Richard Chamberlain coming up on Chuck this season on NBC, and also Brothers and Sisters on ABC.
And there's a terrific movie called We Are the Hartmans that I just finished in New York. And
tell us about it.
Well, it was written by a bunch of young people over a year, kind of through improvisation and everything. And then they brought in a pro writer to kind of put the polish on it. And I play kind of Willie Nelson, kind of aging hippie in it, who runs a rock club that's mostly for kids in the Midwest somewhere. And people are trying to shut it down for some reason. Anyway, it was a ball. I don't think I've ever had so much fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we should post, if we can find a link, We Are the Hartmans, directed by Laura Newman.
Yes.
We should definitely put something on our website so that people can learn more about it. That does not sound, I mean, not that I've defined, you know, idea about who Richard Chamberlain is, but it does not sound like a role. That
no, it was a brand new kind of role for me, and it was really, really fun.
That's probably why it was, fun for you. Definitely.
Richard, we're going to initiate you, as we did Andrea, with recalling a moment in your life in the theater or elsewhere. You know, one of the most embarrassing moments, frightening moments, awkward moments. Something that happened to you in your career.
Well, I was doing a production of Private Lives once in the very beginning of, right after Dr. Kildare, actually, in Summerstock. And the back flat of the set fell over on us. That was pretty scary. And we kept going as well as we could. But I was thinking about this, and I find that the the first day's work in television or film is terrifying to me. And a lot of actors will tell you this, because you're walking, you don't have any rehearsal. It's like the actor's nightmare of being an opening night without any rehearsal at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you don't really know who your character is yet. You don't know the people you're playing with, even though you're supposed to be best friends or whatever it is. And the first day's work on Chuck, for instance, I got very confused at one point. But it was just, it's scary. And then the second day is fine.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that a lot of people who are outside of the business don't realize that it's sort of like your first day is still, I mean, even when you're established as you are, you're not, you know, you're not part of that group. You don't know who the people are.
Yes.
You're a little bit under the microscope because you're the new guy.
Absolutely.
The hardest thing I did day player work myself, and it's the hardest thing to do, because it's sort of like, it's almost like an extension of the interview. You're still sort of proving yourself.
Yes, you know, and discovering your character, et cetera, right in front of the camera.
Right, right. Mm.
Now, have you ever thought of wanting to direct television, or have you?
I like being the kid.
You do.
I don't want to be daddy. I like being told where to go and what to say, and you know, all that. I'm just too lazy.
Excuse
to be a director.
Excuse me while I write that down. Excuse me while I jot that down. I like being the kid. I don't want to be daddy. Okay, so we're alerting people to We Are the Hartmans. We're alerting people to Chuck.
Yes.
We're alerting people to Brothers and Sisters. Boy, you're like the busiest man in show business right now.
All of a sudden, I moved back to L.A. about a year ago, and I'm suddenly working a lot, and I'm really, really happy.
Well, that's right.
I'm,
you were in Hawaii for years,
right? Yeah, I lived in Hawaii for 25 years. Okay. I mean, I was back and forth for work and things, but I love being back in L.A.,
Well, we love having you, and we love having you back on television and in motion pictures. That's where you belong. And please give us the honor of going out in some sort of wonderful show or stepping back onto the Broadway stage at some point in the future.
I would love to.
Yes, and Sterling's upstairs, and we'll talk about
that. Okay, we'll talk about that.
You bet. So, Paul?
Yes?
We have some wonderful surprise guests next week.
Do we?
Coming up, but I think we had a fantastic show today with Andrea. And Richard, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
It was such
lovely to be here.
Oh, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. So we have we'll post them on the website.
Yes, we will.
Should we tease them next week? We'll put them up.
We'll tease
them
on the website.
And we're going to put those notifications to
The work that Richard is doing on our site as well,
indeed.
So people can be alerted to that. And we so look forward to talking to everyone next week. And until then, this is State of the Arts. My name is Paul Strolley with the incredibly lovely and talented Michael Sterling.
Thank you very much, Paul.
And we will see you next week.
All right.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.